This is Gina. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear Gina.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. I would like to call the May 14th Pension Committee meeting to order. Today's pension meeting is being conducted electronically by the means of teleconference under the authority of Governor John C. Carney's Declaration of State of Emergency and Proclamation Number 17-3292. Pension Committee members and Michael Schoen of Marquette Associates are connected by phone and or internet and participating in real time. Members of the public may connect using the telephone conference call-in number that was advertised on this week's agenda. Members of the public may access the packet materials on the county's website. At this time, I want to confirm the members that are on virtual online right now. When I call your name, if you are available, please say here. Mr. Lawson? Mr. Baker?
Here.
Ms. Ryan?
Here.
Mr. Rogers?
Here.
Ms. Brewington? Ms. Roth?
Here.
Okay, we do have enough members for a quorum. So I will now move on to the agenda. Okay, the first item on the agenda is the approval of the February 20th, 2020 minutes. You did have these minutes provided to you via email. Are there any questions or comments about the minutes? Okay, hearing none, they will stand approved. The next item on the agenda is an update on our pension fund's performance. And at this time, I am going to turn it over to Michael Schoen to give us that quarterly report.
Okay. Is there something I need to do? So now this is where I need help. Is there something I need to do to get my... to show you what I've got on my screen.
Yes. So right now you can probably see my screen.
Yes.
And am I in the right area, Dwayne, for him to see share? You have a share option?
Me? Yes.
Are we giving him presenting rights or are you getting presenting
rights? If you can turn it, he can present now.
All right, I'll give him presenting rights.
Thank you.
Okay, so I know. So now I need to go on.
You got to share content.
Okay, I've got to share content. Okay,
and whatever application you're using.
Okay, well, it's just on my desktop, but I have them open. So, what do I want to? Just go to my screen. So what do I want to click on now?
I don't know what application are you using. Are you using PowerPoint? Are you using?
I do have PowerPoint. Yes.
Is that what your files are in your presentation?
Well, I saved them in a file that's on my desktop. So I just
what is the file type?
Pardon me?
What is the file type? Is it a PowerPoint? Is it an?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you share PowerPoint, and you open up the presentation in that.
Okay. Well, now I've opened something up. Can people see? I think I might have missed a step here. Can people see my screen?
No.
Okay. Let me go back one. Sorry. So go back to content. Now, so what I see here, it says share content, and I see start, mail, settings, Microsoft Store, Microsoft Teams, Outlook.
You have PowerPoint open. You've got to open up PowerPoint first.
Okay, help me do that, because what do I do to do that?
My kids would be laughing their butts off, all I can say is, but go ahead.
All right, you said you have it on your desktop. So if you double click on your file that you have on your desktop, it's going to open up an application.
Okay, so if I just open, okay, and what I see is, you know, the PowerPoint, it's, well, it's a PDF is actually what it is.
Okay, then open that up.
Okay.
Is it open?
Yes.
All right, now go back to the WebEx and you say share content. Yes. Show that open file. Using Acrobat or something.
Share content. Oh, Acrobat. Okay, gotcha. Okay, I think. Oh, how's that?
That's it.
There you go. Boy, they say you can't teach old dogs new tricks. What do you know? Okay. Okay. So here we go. So I'm going to, I say basically all know the headline news, which has not been good, but let's go down to here. And okay. So on this first page, and I'll just go over the market environment very quickly, lead into what your performance was, and then we'll also talk about April. So on this page, you can just see, and I'm going to put an arrow on it, this blue bar, that was the estimate when we put this report together probably about 2 weeks ago. You know, GDP was going to be down about 4%. And that's average of a number of different, you know, JP Morgan, Barclays, Bank of America, et cetera. For second quarter, the expectation was that GDP would be down 25%. And then, and I'll stress this word, hopefully in third and fourth quarter, we'll see a bounce back. But note that if the economy is down 4%, 3-4% in the first quarter, 5% in the second quarter, that's, you know, I'll just round off roughly 30%. This bounce back, or hopeful bounce back in third and fourth quarter, doesn't get us even close to where we were at the beginning of the year. Okay. And so obviously this had negative impacts on a whole lot of areas, one of them being the financial market. I will also go on and point out, there's one of the questions, and I might be getting a little ahead of myself, but is, you know, the question is, well, when do we think the economy will turn around? When do we think the markets will turn around? And my view, and I think view of some, but not necessarily all, is it's all going to be dependent upon, you know, it's really a health issue that is driving all this. And so the health issue gets resolved. We will continue to have a depressed economy. The question is how depressed will it be? Now, on this page, this is a quick, just a, which of the industries that were hurt the worst? And you can see, as we expect, air travel down 80%, recreational services down 87%, restaurants, hotels, et cetera. And a couple actually had some positive gain, but more like in healthcare areas, food. Right. So then this is the Federal Reserve balance sheet. And everybody can see here, this was 2008, 2009, when the Fed had the, you know, we remember here the QE1s and the QE2s and the intent to put more money into the economy. Well, the Fed this time around has said that not only are they putting money into the economy, but they said, basically, there'll be an open checkbook, that they're just not going to let this go into depression. And that is, you know, I hate to use that word, but that is a concern that things get so bad that leads to a recession. So much was learned from the 1930s. Hopefully enough has been learned that, you know, that there's a need to stimulate the economy, both from fiscal and monetary policy. And that's what the Fed's doing. And just yesterday, they came out and they said they're going to need more than just monetary policy. They need the federal government to do even more spending. You know, now this will lead to issues of, well, the inflationary, it's a whole other set of questions, but their number one concern is to make sure it doesn't lead to a depression. The U.S. economy, what this just shows, the darker bars I'm showing you, is money set aside by the banks for loan losses. You can see like JP Morgan had $8.3 billion set aside compared to beginning of the quarter at $1.5. The banks are in much, much better shape than they were in 2008. The magnitude of this economic fall off very well may be greater than that. So right now they're in good shape, and the Fed has said they will do everything to make sure that they stay liquid. And this here, what you can see is basically is across the board. Every country has had significant fall off relative to what was expected for the quarter. Okay. Now, what does this all mean in returns for the overall markets? U.S. equities were down 20.9% for the quarter. That's better than international equities that were down 24%, and emerging markets were down almost 24%. So the steps you took last year, if you recall, you made we made the recommendation, but you guys took the action of increasing your U.S. equities and decreasing your international equities was positive, actually, not only for fourth quarter of last year, but also first quarter of this year. Now, does that mean there wasn't a loss noted? Absolutely, there's a huge loss. But the loss, this decision you made, at least lessened that loss to some degree. Bonds, as we might expect, did, you know, positively. It's a flight to quality, especially treasuries. High yield bonds, and I want to mention that high yield bonds, which, you know, I used to always joke about being, you know, that's just another name for junk bonds. Never been a believer in junk bonds, and all of a sudden, high yield bonds, now you have a little bit in your portfolio. So I'll talk just a little bit why we've now put that in there, something that I've always sort of railed against for a long time. But as you might expect, as the concern about the economy getting worse and worse, and therefore a greater risk of default than high yield bonds, people are going to demand a higher interest rate relative to treasuries to say, oh, if you want me to buy that corporate stock from you or that mortgage, I need a higher interest rate to make up for that. Otherwise, I'll take the security of the treasury. So where I might have before wanted maybe 4% or 5% points more, now I may want 8 or 10% points more. Okay. Well, when interest rates go up, bond values go down. You know, and so high yield bonds didn't do well in first quarter, as we would not expect them to do. Now I'm going to jump ahead a little bit before I get back to, since I mentioned high yield bonds, because you've been reading the emails we sent you. We have a little bit, and that's 2%, roughly 2.5% of your portfolios, both portfolios, into high yield bonds. I say, well, Michael, isn't that contrary to what I've been saying over all these years? Well, one is we saw in 2009 that high yield bonds were actually the best performers coming out of the Great Recession. And so when spreads widened far enough and they got over 10 percentage points difference between treasuries and high yields, then high yields become very attractive. And they are higher up on the capitalization structure of a corporation, meaning if a corporation is in threat of defaulting or defaults, all the bondholders get paid off first, and then the stockholders later, you know, if anything's left over. So better position, and you know, coming out of this Great Recession. So we didn't move a lot, but instead of going in on equities, we said, let's be more cautious and we'll go in, at least initially, start buying back into your portfolio into high yields, you know, 2 to 2.5%. Emerging market bonds, you can see we're negative. HIPS, which are inflation protected securities. Commodities, as you might expect, especially driven by oil. You know, if the economy falls off the cliff, then demand for commodities is going to drop. You know, you think of copper and obviously oil, you know, and oil being the biggest driver. And U.S. REITs, which are different from how you invested in real estate, were down over 23%. U.S. REITs are publicly traded securities that you buy on the New York Stock Exchange that hold real estate and real estate operating companies. They tend to be much more cyclical, much more volatile than the type of real estate that you invest in Clarion. And they were down by, Clarion actually was up by a little bit more than 1%. Now, let's speak about that a minute, because I don't necessarily think they're going to be up the next quarter and the next quarter after that. My guess is they will be down, but much less volatile than publicly traded securities. On the yield curve, you can see the green line is the treasury yield over the, I'll say on the far right-hand side, that's 30-year treasuries, and working our way back, 15, 5, and then, basically money markets, treasuries. That was a year ago. This dotted line was a quarter ago. And then at the end of March, interest rates came down dramatically, one, because of demand for borrowing was down dramatically, and because the Fed, I'm sure you've all heard, read, is basically trying to set interest rates at zero. They're trying to prime the economy, get people to borrow, whether consumers or corporations, okay? And that led to positive returns in fixed income because as interest rates come down, bond values go up. A lot of numbers here. What you should take out of this is growth stocks did better than value stocks, which is unusual when the market falls off like this. And then large cap stocks did better than small cap stocks, and that's not unusual. Typically the smaller companies get more adversely affected in an economic downturn. So in fact, the technology stocks continue to win the day because you think of how we're all communicating today, there's more and more use of technology, and healthcare, as you might expect, did well also because of, everybody wanted to find that one or two companies that find, the magic cure to all this. Let me stop for a second and ask if anybody's got any questions about the economy and or the market for the quarter. So here's the fund itself. For the quarter, you lost $16 million, or the plan lost $16 million for the quarter, with a return of down 13.5 versus your policy index, which was down 13.8. So there's all that, there's two positives that came out of that. One is your policy index did better than your old policy index because you have more international stocks in your policy, more US stocks in your policy index than you did before, roughly about 3%. But on top of that, because of I'll declare a victory in the first quarter, we'll see how things go after that, but with the change you made late last year to move to the Consulting Plus, if you recall, you had several quarters in a row with having the state funds in there and all that, where you were underperforming your policy index. Your fund outperformed by 30 basis points for the quarter. So that was less of a loss. As I say, I'll declare victory and go home. And for the year, the loss was $6.1 million versus a return of down 5.5. A year is from April 1st to March 31st. Okay, so and then versus the policy index of down 4.6. Most of that driven because this, you all know, the underperformance of the state fund in a more recent time period. You'll see here it says liquidation of the state pool. Most of it was liquidated at the very end of the year, but there were some legacy assets because they didn't spend all of it out until some of it was held back, and then the rest of it came sometime, I don't recall exactly, but sometime in the first quarter. I mentioned the fund transition to the OCIO, that's Consulting Plus lineup, on December 20th. Looking ahead, your observation, but you did fund 5% into the Clarion Real Estate Fund, and that fund was positive for the quarter, like 1.3%. And your investment policy statement became effective as of the beginning of this year. These changes being U.S. equities were bumped up a little bit, international stocks were bumped down a little bit. I think it was 18 before, if I remember, and then you edit real estate. So, any questions about performance? Does anybody want me to go into more detail, or Gina, tell me if that's sufficient for the quarter?
Does any of the pension committee members have any questions? Not hearing any. Go ahead, Michael, you can proceed.
Okay, so since I'm on this document, I'm going to go on to the OPEB, and then we'll come back to the other. Clarion was up 1.2 for the quarter. I will tell you that I would suspect they will be down. They don't have a lot of retail in their portfolio. That's one of the reasons why you found that attractive. But I think it'll take some time for some of these write downs, but I think you'll see over the next couple of quarters some of the real estate, having some negative quarters in there. Okay, here's the OPEB fund. Right, as of the end of March was 42.5 million, lost 6.8 for the quarter, down 13.8, which matched the policy index. For the 1 year, it was lost 2.2 million with a return of 4.7 versus the policy index that was down 4.8. A lot of the same observations and looking ahead as the pension that transitioned over. That one actually was on December 19th. We could do that a day earlier because we didn't have to wait for the state funds. And then these other changes with the adding Clarion and changing investment policy. Oh. Any questions about the OPEB for the first quarter? I will get into what's happened during April and just touch on some of the changes, everybody's been getting the emails, but some of the, you see, there's been almost weekly small add-ins on the portfolio to get you back to your targets. Any questions on the OPEB?
I do not have any.
Okay. I'm going to click out of this, and we'll see if I can click in back. Okay. Right. This. Oh, no, you don't want to see my email. Sorry. Okay. On everybody here. Okay. So there's a, now I presume everybody can't see this yet. Is that correct?
No. What are you sharing? Another application?
Yeah, I'm sharing another application. So
you have that application open?
It is open now. So
okay. Now you can go to share content. The application has to be open.
Okay. Yep. Okay. There we go. Okay. So this is
Michael. One second. I think Dave Baker has a question. Dave, okay. Can we hear you? He's muted. Can you unmute him? There we go. Mr. Baker, there we go. We can hear you. Can you?
Oh, okay. Great.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, I have a couple of questions. On the high yield bonds, are they short term?
They are. I say they lean towards short term. They're not long term, but they're not intermediate term, but I think the duration on them is about 4 years. Average duration on that off the top of my head.
Okay. Do you plan on purchasing more of those, or are you staying about the 2.5%?
We're gonna stay at 2.5%. I don't see us adding any more to that. We put a cap of the overall fixed income. We didn't want any more than say 8 to 9% of the total fixed income into that space. And you're at 8% right now.
Okay. And you thought about investing on the stocks, investing more particularly cautious investments like utilities or maybe some things like biotech or.
Yeah. Why don't I work down this page? So this will first show you for the quarter. Okay. So for April, you're up 7.3%. Okay. Now you'll see that's below the policy index of 8.2. And you say, oh, how come? Because going into April, you were about 5 percentage points below the equity target. If your equity target 65, we had you at 60 because we wanted to be, quite frankly, we wanted to be more cautious, more protective because the market could have gone the other way. So if you're 60% equities and equities are doing, you know, well relative to bonds, you're going to make money. It's not as much money if we had you up to 65%, but in line with what you were saying, Dave, is we want to take a cautious approach. If you could see here, this 10.9% within equities, 10.9 versus the benchmark 10.7. So within equities, you outperformed. It's just that we were under allocated and intentionally under allocated. The last thing I wanted to do and the investment committee wanted to do, our investment committee wanted to do, was, you know, all of a sudden say, you're 5 or 6 percentage points below. Let's push all our chips in, hoping that the stock market's going to go up in April and May. What we did is, everybody's seen from the emails, we went in 0.5% every week, you know, so dollar cost averaging in. Okay. Well, let me highlight a couple, Dave, you mentioned about some of the more protective ones. Okay. Washington Mutual, which for those of you who are in brokerage industry, this is their R6 share. So I think it's 25 or 30 basis points. So it's not what you might be used to in the A shares. They were up, you know, for the quarter 11.7, but year to date down 12.3 versus a benchmark of 16.4. It's what we'd expect down. They tend to be more protected in down markets. Same thing with Vanguard Dividend Growth. Okay, they were under for the April of 8.9 versus 12.8. With the year to date, they were down 9.9 versus 9.3. That means in the first quarter, they outperformed by, I'm going to say, about 3.5%. April, they were under by about 4%. But in first quarter, they outperformed. So they're a more protective one. Same thing with Virtus, KAR, okay? You can see 11.5 for the quarter. More importantly, year to date, they're only down 8.8 versus the mid-cap index of down 16.6. So you can see there's, at least in those funds, I'll show you a couple of those, in those funds, definitely a leaning toward the more conservative equity funds. Now, Dodge and Cox, well, actually, let me stick with that, and then I'll come out. MFS Low Vol, okay, for the year is down 11.9 versus the benchmark, which is down 12.9, so outperforming. For April, they were under, but as you might expect, the more aggressive funds are the ones that typically did well in April. But this is one that's more defensive, so that's why year to date you see them outperforming. Okay, same thing with Schroeder. Okay, so most of your funds are either index funds or ones that protect in the down markets. The exception to that rule was Dodge and Cox. Dodge and Cox is the home run hitter in your portfolio. So they were up 11.7 in April versus a benchmark of 8.7, but for the year they're still behind. They were underperformed in first quarter. We'd expect them to underperform. They don't do well in down markets. They do well in up markets. But note, you only have 2.5% of your portfolio in that space. And win that fund. I will also tell you that as we started adding to these funds, Dodge and Cox, is their target is actually 3. We've left them under their target. So you can see, you know, here you're over allocated to the index fund. You're level on Washington Mutual, basically level on Dividend Growth, pretty much level on KAR. You're under on Dodge and Cox. So we were adding to the more conservative ones as we added in. So now I will tell you what didn't work and we're looking at, and we haven't made a change yet, but we are in the process of looking at very heavily. In the bond area, okay, down here, you have money managed by Wilmington Trust, okay, who actually did well, okay. They're at 3.9 versus 3.8 in the benchmark, okay. You had Treasuries that did well, 9.2 versus 9.2, and you would expect that Treasuries, like the quality, 5 to 10 year maturity, the longer the maturity, the better it does, okay. But you had BlackRock, low duration, which is a fund. It's investment grade, but it doesn't hold Treasuries. It holds other things like mortgages. Lord Abbott holds mainly corporate bonds. Those did well in April. Okay, you can see that up to 1, up to 3. But for the year, BlackRock is behind, Lord Abbott is behind. We'd expect them to be behind because that type of what you call spread product, non-treasury securities, would not do as well as a benchmark that has treasuries in it. But I would say, and it's just that we haven't come to the conclusion exactly what we're going to do, but one of these two funds is going to go. But what we don't want to do is, after it got beaten down, as the spreads between treasuries and non-treasuries closer, now is not the time to get rid of them. But I would say probably in the next quarter to two quarters, you're going to see a change in the fixed income structure. Okay. We like this. We like this. And the high yield, as you can see, did what we were hoping to do. They were up 4.5% for April. Okay. We started buying in roughly mid-March. We rode that down a little bit, but our timing was, you know, and we don't time the market. You know, we can never guess exactly what's going to go to the bottom, but we happen to be pretty close to the bottom on that, at least until the last 2 days. So that was definitely an add for in April. So anyway, that's a bit of a long answer there, but that's my MO, as we all know. But Dave, does that answer your questions?
Yeah, on the fixed income, I guess with so much with Federal Reserve kind of pumping money into the new money into the economy and increasing the money supply, do you have concerns about inflation in the future? I mean, I know like the intermediate did well this time, like as this is shown with the Fidelity Intermediate Treasury Bond Index going up so much. But I guess, you know, in the long run, if rates go up, then bonds, the intermediate bonds will lose value. I just was wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Sure. So it really sort of two issues. One is inflation and the other is interest rates. And are you paid enough to go further out on the yield curve or your maturity? Because it's in most environments, not all, to entice somebody to hold a lot, you know, any bond longer than say cash, you have to pay them a higher interest rate to do that. Because, you know, one is people don't want to give up their money for a longer period of time, but also the fear of, well, if inflation goes up, you get locked into a lower yield. But having said that, am I concerned about inflation? Not even though there's been a lot of money pumped into it. I look back in 2008 and 2009, everybody was concerned then about, oh, is this going to be inflationary? No, it actually was done to make sure we didn't have deflation. I'll take the word depression off the table for a moment. Because deflation can be as bad as inflation. Because, you know, if you think of it, let's say the cost of goods go down. Well, are people going to consume? Well, no, because they're going to say, you know, I know it's going to be cheaper 6 months from now or a year from now. So people stop buying, blows up the economy, okay, dramatically. You know, what happens to already building, you know, if the cost of goods go down, you know, and then people don't want to take a salary cut, although one could argue, say, well, if inflation goes up 6, you want salaries to go up 6%. Well, if inflation goes down 6, deflation, I think, is a much bigger concern right now than inflation. And I think the Fed has basically said that that's the fight they're going to fight right now, not just deflation, but depression. Okay. or at least a huge, huge, longer term sustained recession, and not inflation be damned, but they have mechanisms, you know, that if inflation starts rearing its head, they do have ways to choke back the supply, you know, money supply, as long as we don't get, like we had back in the 70s, stagflation, which is stagnant economy and inflation. But that was more driven because of the oil crisis. So that's a long answer. Now, having said that, interest rates, you know, as you work out the curve, you say, okay, the yield curve upward sloping, I showed that to you earlier, you know, you get paid more to hold a five-year bond than a one-year bond. Yes, is it a lot? No. But do you want to, so one of the things we're looking at is a number of our clients use the aggregate index instead of the investment intermediate government corporate index, which is 6 years average duration versus this, which is four. We're having some discussions with our clients about maybe moving, shortening that up. On yours, I think I'd stay where it is. I don't think I'd go, you'll give up more yield. And I don't think, I would stay where I am right now. If that flattens out, if that yield curve flattens out more, you know, maybe we talk about shortening the maturity on this. But right now, I would stick where you are, because it's not real long. It's shorter than most out there, in fact, which has always been your MO. So.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. The last thing I'll add to that is you do have other protections against inflation. You know, you have real estate in here, which tends to be a hedge against inflation. And actually equities, not quarter by quarter, but on a long, intermediate to longer term basis, equities actually tend to be a pretty good hedge against inflation also. So. Okay.
Michael, before you continue, I just want Dwayne to unmute everybody, all the pension committee members, if they have any other questions. There was a muting issue. Okay. So does
some are muting themselves when I unmute. So.
Okay. Well, make sure they're all unmuted at this point. Does anybody have any questions? And if you do, please just state your name before you ask the question.
This is Mitch Rogers. Can you hear me now?
I can. Thank you, Mitch.
So Michael, back a few slides ago, we got 1% in cash, which is $400,000 or so. What's its purpose? I mean, is it for payouts? Or is it just, a float?
It is at this point, it's more float for yourselves. A lot of our clients, their process is they make monthly benefits out of their funds. You guys don't do that. So it's mainly for float. But we also, as we were making some transitions, I'd rather have, for a while though, we had more than 1%. We had more than that just because, quite frankly, very unusual times. You know, I'm not quite sure where I want to go. I'd rather have that security of cash, you know. But generally,
what are we going to use it for? I mean, there's plenty of cash inside all the mutual funds that, you know, for them to do their thing.
Well,
what do we use it for?
So you use it really for cash flow. You know, you have expenses you have to pay. Right now, in fact, right now you're down to, you know, under 1% in the pension, and the other one you're at, you know, 30 basis points in cash. You know, actually some in the money market I've just flipped it to the OPEB fund because Gina does need to, what, in the page you see here, that $204,000 in the OPEB fund, that's really for Gina. That we don't actually oversee any of that. We just put it in the report for you. And then this other, that's just liquidity. So if we need to make some changes, especially when you have like a Wilmington Trust, which is a separately managed portfolio, it's not a mutual fund, we need some liquidity when we make changes in the portfolio.
So Mitch, to confirm what Michael's saying, some of our expenses, our investment fees, things like that, will come directly out. They'll be wired right out of those accounts.
Cash, we've got cash set aside.
Correct. Yeah, because okay. It comes out of the pension fund.
Yeah. As well as Wilmington Trust as the custodian, and Wilmington Trust as the investment manager.
Got it.
Okay. Typically, we keep you definitely on the short side on cash. You know, even though the policy calls for the one, we'll typically have you at half the 30 basis points in cash. We won't usually have you at one, but you know, right now we were having a little higher. So, okay. Now the only other pages I have, and Gina, tell me if you want me to go through them or I can just verbalize them. It's what everybody's been getting on a weekly basis, which shows the trades that we were making. I can open those up and quickly summarize them or just verbally summarize.
Right. That's just 1 second. I just want to make sure. I thought I heard somebody else start to speak or ask another question. Anybody else on the pension committee have any questions on the update through April 30th? Or even anything else that Michael has spoke about?
I have one. Given the current health crisis, I mean, do you have any plans on making any changes in general at this point, Mike, to the selection of assets or that you haven't talked about?
I think the number one area that we're going, so first off, a lot of things that we were going to do, we've done, like adding, you know, slowly rebalancing back into the portfolio, adding high yield. You know, I would see us definitely making a change on fixed income. It's just we're going through the process of deciding what that change needs to be. So we're definitely looking at that, and I expect that in probably a couple of weeks. We just want to, you know, make sure what every day new information comes out. On the equity side, we're happy. You know, obviously Dodge and Cox got on our radar screen last quarter because they've had continued underperformance for a while, especially last quarter. But now what they are doing, we've always liked them as a firm. We've liked their fee structure. We like that they're long-term, you know, holders of their stocks. They don't roll them out, you know, that I feel like a buy and hold, but they buy and hold them for, you know, average 3 to 4 years. But it's been a while since they've been able to show themselves because they're a deep value manager. Well, now for the reasons why we have them in the portfolio, they've, at least for a month, they've done well. And we look at the rest of the lineup and, you know, we're happy with it. So anyway, the bond side is where we would, where we'll make some changes. And I said, we've made some other changes during the course of the quarter. Keep in mind you guys made a big change last year, which was the investment policy change. Investment policy is the number one driver of how your fund does. So with that implementation, you know, I'd say a lot of heavy lifting got done. I can't say we had the foresight that all this was going to happen, but fortunately those changes were beneficial to you, especially the tweaking of the international U.S. stock allocation. And then we let the managers within there in the funds, you know, if they like healthcare better, you know, like, you know, they might weight that space, you know, for the actively managed managers, that the index funds will stay indexed.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? Okay, not hearing any. Michael, yeah, you can move on.
Okay.
And look at the allocation sheets.
Okay. Good. Okay, there we go. Oh. One here. Okay. Now let me. Okay. So this is the pension. Okay. So at that point, so this shows what your allocation was when as of February 21st. Okay. Pretty much spot on. Okay. Then we sold some bonds and bought some equities on March 2nd because you were under, in our discipline, in almost all circumstances, this would be something outside of the norm, is when you move more than, your portfolio moves more than plus or minus 2% of their targets, we will buy back into the market, okay? Or sell out of the market. We think a very disciplined rebalancing process adds value. Our studies and Marquette, you know, when it was Pierce Park and Marquette studies and other studies say that 2% seems to be that magic number. So we bought back in, but as you can see here, you were under by about 2.5%. When we bought back in, you were under by 2%. We could see this was and seemed to be a very unusual circumstance, and so we didn't buy all the way back in. We only bought in 0.5%. Okay. Then on March 13th, we sold some of the bonds, the ones I mentioned earlier, okay, and bought some high yield. Okay. So that's when we got 2% into high yield, and we sold it out of one of the active bond fund managers. So it was March 20th, we sold some bonds and bought some stocks just for this ongoing adding 0.5%. You know, but we didn't do it the week before that because we added into high yield. Then on the 24th, and if I remember correctly, I think it was 23rd was the bottom of the market, we bought some more equities. Okay, actually, excuse me, let me back up. We sold the bonds and bought some equities, and then we bought some more equities. So we did have, we sold enough bonds, but we went to, with the volatility in the market, we didn't want to just jump in, you know, a full 1% right away. So we spread it out because of the volatility in the market. Okay. And then on March 30th, we sold some bonds and then bought some more high yield. And that takes us through the end of the quarter. And then we did a little bit more, you know, in between the equity markets going up and these rebalancing, we got you, I'll say, close enough to your targets. You can see even then, that's end of March, you were, you know, almost 4% under the equity targets, but we kept your in your investment policy statement. But between the equities started really going, moving quickly in April, and then we also bought, you know, and then we bought some more. And now you're still in, you're now inside, you're still a little low on equities. Relative to that 65%, I think it was like 64, and then after yesterday and today, it might be 63 or 62 because the markets have been down. But that's been the process. It's a very disciplined, add 0.5% dollar cost average in. So that's what we've done. And the OPEB fund follows the same story. You know, if you want me to open that up, I can, or I'll make. But, any questions about the activity in March?
I'm just curious, Mike. You said you use dollar cost averaging when you do this.
Well, yeah, basically because we're going in half each time we buy in, we're buying like let's say if you're 60% equities and the target 65, then we're going to add. Instead of taking you all the way up to 65, we added in 0.5%. So then you're at 60.5%. And then the next week we would look at it and we would add another, we would add to high yield or we would add it to equities. So instead of going from 60 jumping all the way to 65, we incrementally slowly bought in. You know.
Which is what you're showing us. Yep.
Exactly. Yep.
Thanks.
Yeah. Because quite frankly, the stock market could have gone the other way. And what we didn't want to do is, all of a sudden, we buy it the day it hit the top, you know.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Any other questions on that activity?
Does anybody have any other questions? Okay, I'm not hearing any. Okay. Michael, that is the end of your presentation, correct?
Yeah, unless you want to see the OPEB pages will look just like this.
It would be the same, number, yes.
It's the same, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
For the most part, yeah.
Okay. And we didn't discuss infrastructure as we thought we were going to last quarter. And that was my choice as to this isn't the time to make any changes. To do that. So hopefully the next quarter would be different and we could start looking at other things to change our investment policy statement. Does anybody on the pension committee have any recommendations or any thoughts on things you would like to see next quarter?
This is Kit. I really don't, just because I think we just need to sit tight and see how things shake out next couple of months as the economy starts to reopen. So just this kind of preview, I think, is all that I really want to see next year.
I agree. Thank you, Kit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I agree with you. There's just, in 2008, 2009, as bad as that was, we sort of knew what the tools were to turn things around, even though they might have been used a little bit more smoothly than maybe should have been done, in my view. But this is just such a wild card with the healthcare issue and what happens. I think just staying cautious and not doing anything wild or radical is the best approach. So I'm agreeing with you 100%, Kit.
And Michael, to Mitch's point, after June 30, because June 30 is when I spend a lot of the money in order to pay, because it's our fiscal year, paying all of our quarterly fees, that maybe we can look at the cash even going lower the way I have things structured, because I know at this time is the time to start putting some of that cash in since everything's so low. Right. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's definitely something that we probably, you and I, could strategize for the next quarter.
Yeah, just for the most part, we've kept you pretty low. It just through this, just because of the need, like if we were going to trade, especially like if we need to take some money from Wilmington Trust, we didn't want to go to them each week and say, give us $50,000. That wrecks havoc for them. So we might have gone to them and say, look, we need $200,000. And so then we'd sit on, there'd be more cash than we need for several weeks until we needed to then deploy that, because of dollar cost averaging approach. But yes,
that's right. Okay. Are there any other questions before we adjourn the meeting? Anybody have any last minute questions?
No.
Okay. So what I'm going to have to do here for the adjournment is I'm going to do a roll call. Normally we do it by a voice vote. It's a little more difficult this way. So can I have somebody make a motion to adjourn?
Mitch does.
Okay, Mitch makes the motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second, Kit.
Second.
And a second for Kit. Okay, we're going to go and take a vote. Mr. Baker?
Yes.
Ms. Ryan?
Yes.
Mr. Rogers?
Yes.
Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Ms. Roth?
Yes.
And Mr. Lawson? Yes. He signed. Okay. And I vote yes, we are adjourned.
Gina, yes. I just want to mention that Pat tried to, if we have to do this again next time, Pat tried to call in also, but he was on after he had a client meeting that lasted, but he tried to call in and he wasn't on the invite list. So next time, just have to make sure we get him on the invite list. So
absolutely. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep. Okay.
Bye-bye.